Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
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 Namo Vishnu Shastra Guru Shyamani Bhakti Vrindam Swami Namo Namaste Saraswati Deva Gauravani Prakarane Narvishesha Sinevani Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nishananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Ashwa Sri Lord Bhakta Vrinda
Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama Rama Hare
Hare Sri Krishna Bhavam Kyanam Kwa Chapter 29 Verse 35 Arte
Arte
Avidyamane
Avidyamane
Samsutil
Samsutil
Na
Na
Nivartate
Nivartate
Manasa
Manasa
Linga
Rupena
Rupena
Swapne
Swapne
Charato
Vicharato
Yata
Yata
Arte Avidyamane
Pi
Arte Avidyamane Pi
Samsatir Nani Vartate
Samsatir Nani Vartate
Manasa Linga Rupena
Manasa Linga Rupena
Swapne Vicharato Yata
Swapne Vicharato Yata
Arte Avidyamane Pi
Arte
Thus we create some situation in a subtle form and suffer the consequences. These sufferings cannot be mitigated unless we are awakened from our dream. Purport, as stated in the Vedas, the living entity is always separate from two kinds of material bodies, the subtle and gross. All our sufferings are due to these material bodies, as expanded in Bhagavad Gita, from Sanat Kunti, the non-permanent appearance of happiness, contrast them. Disappearance and due course are like the appearance and disappearance of winter and summer seasons. They arise from sense perception or sign I brought from Haradam. One must learn to tolerate them without being disturbed. Lord Krishna thus informed Arjuna that all the distresses brought about by the body come and go. One has to learn how to tolerate them. Materialism is the cause of all of our sufferings, for we do not suffer once we are out of material condition. The Vedas therefore enjoin that one should practically understand that we are not material but actually Brahman. This understanding cannot be fully realized unless one is engaged in Brahman activities, namely devotional service. To get free from material conditions, one must take to Krishna consciousness. That is the only remedy. The real interest of the living entity is to get out of the meshes that causes him to endure repeated birth and death. The only remedy is to surrender unto the Supreme Personality of the Godhead through his representative. And thus one renders devotional service unto the Supreme Personality of the Godhead, Vasudeva, one cannot possibly become completely detached from this material world, nor can he possibly manifest real knowledge. Therefore, this is the way to become detached from the artificial material condition. The only remedy is to take the Krishna consciousness and constant engagement in devotional service to Lord Vasudeva, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Everyone is trying to be happy, and the process adopted to achieve this happiness is called self-interest. Unfortunately, the conditioned soul hovering within this material world does not know that his ultimate goal of self-interest is Vasudeva. Sometimes your material existence begins with the illusion bodily conception of life, and on the basis of this conception there ensues a series of unwanted things. These unwanted things are actually mental desires or various types of sense gratification. In this way one accepts different types of bodies within this material world. One first has to control the mind so that the desires of the mind can be purified. This process is described in the Narada Pancharata as Sarvopahi Nirmuktam Tatparatvena Nirmala. Unless one purifies his mind, there's no question of getting free from the material condition. As stated in Srimad Bhagavatam, the material miseries of the living entity which are superfluous to him can be directly mitigated by the linking process of devotional service. But the mass of people do not know this, and therefore the learned Vyasadeva compiled this Vedic literature which is in relation to the Supreme Truth. Anarthas, unwanted things, come down from one bodily life to another. To get out of this entanglement, one has to take to the devotional service of Lord Vasudeva Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The word guru is significant in this connection. The word guru may be translated as heavy or supreme. In other words, the guru is the spiritual master. Sri Rishabhadeva advised his sons, Guru Nasa Sya Namochya Ya Santayam Rikyum. One should not take up the post of spiritual master unless he is able to lead his disciple from the cycle of birth and death. Material existence is actually a chain of action and reaction brought about by different types of fruitive activities. This is the cause of birth and death. One can stop this process only by engaging oneself in the service of Vasudeva. Bhakti refers to those activities performed in the service of Lord Vasudeva. Because Lord Vasudeva is the Supreme, one should engage oneself in his service, not in the service of the demigods. Devotional service begins from the neophyte stage, the state of observing the rules and regulations, extends to the point of spontaneous loving service of the Lord. The purpose of all stages is to satisfy Lord Vasudeva. When one is perfectly advanced in devotional service of Vasudeva, one becomes completely detached from the service of the body, that is his designated position in material existence. After becoming so detached, one becomes actually perfect in knowledge and engages perfectly in the service of Lord Vasudeva. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, Jivara Sarupoi Krishna Nityadasa, every living entity is the constitutional position. Is by constitutional position the eternal servant of Krishna. As soon as one engages in the service of Lord Vasudeva, he attains his normal constitutional position. His position is called the liberated state. Muktir Titpanyata Rupam Sarupinya Vivasadhi. In the liberated stage, one is situated in the original Krishna conscious position. He gives up all engagements in the service of matter, engagements in confidence in the name of social service, national service, community service, dog service, automobile service, and so many other services conducted under the illusion of I and mine. As explained in the second chapter of the first canto, by rendering devotional service under the the personality of God is Sri Krishna, one immediately acquires causal knowledge and detachment from the world. Thus, one must engage in the service of Vasudeva without material desire, mental speculation, or fruitive activity. Translation: sometimes we suffer because we see a tiger in a dream or a snake in a vision, but actually there is neither a tiger nor a snake. Thus we create some situation in a subtle form and suffer the consequences. The sufferings cannot be mitigated unless we are awakened from our dream. The real interest of the living angels is to get out of the nescience that cause him to endure repeated birth and death. The only remedy is to surrender unto the Supreme Personality of God as his representative. Unless one renders devotional service under the Supreme Personality of God, Vasudeva, one cannot possibly become detached from this material world, nor can he possibly manifest real knowledge. So here Narada Muni has given first an example of the position in the material world of the jiva, and also indicates a solution. So he gives the example of the dream. So if one is in a dream, we may see many different things, like a tiger or a snake or whatever, things which actually don't exist when we wake up. But within the dream, they seem to have an existence. And they seem to not only have an existence, but they have effects. So we see the tiger, and the tiger bites you, or whatever, like that. So there's actions and so on in that dream. And not only we see things, but we also do things within a dream. Then when we wake up, we understand, oh, that was not real. That was only a dream taking place in the mind. So we understand that something taking place in the mind is different from something in the waking state. We have two different worlds, and the waking world is the real world and the other is the dream world, so we don't pay too much attention to that world. So we take that analogy a little further and we say again, the whole material world in its waking state is also like a dream, and we're in the dream and we see things and we react to things and we have experiences just as one does in a dream. Now the difference is that normally we don't wake up from that dream and say, oh, yeah, that was just a dream. Okay? So, therefore, we don't think of it as a dream. But the Bhagavatam here is saying, yes, this is also like a dream. It's not real in the sense that nothing is happening to the Atma at all. Yes, the experiences are real, just like the dream experiences are also real in the sense that you react to things, you feel things, you experience things, yes. But when we wake up, then we say, oh, that was not so significant, because we pay more attention to this world. But it's not that the dream is false. Yes, somebody is dreaming. It's not that he's not dreaming. He is dreaming. And he's having an experience. But we don't consider it very significant in relation to the waking world. So similarly, the waking world also is like a dream. It is not false. But if one wakes up from that waking state, and then one understands that, yes, all of my experiences in the material world are insignificant. And why? Because they don't actually relate to the Atma. Just as in the dream, all these experiences you have don't actually relate to your body. When you wake up, you find you're not bitten by the tiger after all. So then you say, oh, that was this dream. It's only in the mind. So similarly, when one gets spiritual knowledge, and then we understand I'm not the body. And so all of these experiences of the material world have to do with our body. And we take that as the basis of our reality. Then when we realize we're not the body, we're the Atma, then suddenly we see, oh, the material world and all the experiences here are actually just like the dream. So just as when we wake up from the dream, we realize, oh, that was not my real body, that was not my real self, that was the dream body I had. So, when we get spiritual knowledge, then we understand, oh, this experiences I have in the material world is only this material body, but that's not actually me at all. So, here we have two levels of realization, one dream versus waking world, and another waking world versus spiritual world, spiritual reality. So the comparison is made like that. So in each case, what is the solution? If we're caught in a dream and we never wake up, then we'll think that's real. And it'll go on forever like that. So the solution is to wake up finally, and then we realize, oh, that was not very, it wasn't real at all. Similarly, our experiences in the material world can go on forever. And in fact, they're described like that in the Bhagavatam. Unlike the dream state, everybody wakes up from the sleep state and comes a waking state, and as far as normal people are concerned, except people maybe in comas or something like that. So people in the normal world all wake up from that state, but people don't wake up from conditioned state of material existence. So the state is called anadi bahirmukha. The jiva, without beginning, wanders around in the material world, looking out and observing objects and trying to enjoy them. Unlike the dream state from which one naturally wakes up, one does not naturally wake up from the state of existence in this material world. Nevertheless, there is ways of getting awoken. Even if no one wakes you up from a dream, you wake up naturally after some time. But that doesn't happen with material existence. You don't naturally just get out of material existence at a certain point. No, it doesn't work like that. One continues time and time again. But it is possible to get woken up. That is possible. So that means that it has to be some other person or instrument there to wake one up. So of course this consists of various things, but ultimately we can say it's a combination of the Supreme Lord, the devotees, scripture, and spiritual methods. And these combine to help wake up the jiva. So in this way, finally we can get out of that particular existence. In the case of Puranjana, we see that he was enjoying his city, which is his material body, and then he was very depressed because he had to give up that city, it burned down, and then he went and got another body, whatever. Then he got enlightened by the Brahmana in the next lifetime. So there was some medium by which he got real knowledge. And of course he also married, married a king who was a devotee at that stage. So then that also was a good advancement for the King Puranjana. So by the intervention of devotees who teach the process of bhakti, then we end this dream state of the material world. Yes, there are other processes, karma yoga and varnashram and jnana yoga, but the main process is the process of bhakti. So that is mentioned here where it says Vasudeva Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Samadhi. Bhakti Yoga must be performed, offered to the Supreme Lord Vasudeva. And by doing that, automatically one becomes detached from material existence and one develops perfect knowledge of everything. So the implication here is that ignorance is ended by the process of bhakti. That means the opposite of ignorance is knowledge. Yet, we do not have to strive for knowledge like Jnani does, not through that process. Knowledge is automatically produced by the performance of bhakti. So our effort is to serve the Lord with devotion. One of the results is knowledge, by which we are free from material existence. It's not the goal, knowledge is not the goal of bhakti, but it is produced by bhakti. So that means we get free of material existence by the process of bhakti, as a byproduct. We become detached from everything in the material world by the process of bhakti. Even though detachment itself, of course, leads to liberation, but that is not the goal of the devotee also, but it is automatically achieved. So these are things which are achieved by the process of bhakti. In this way, the jiva ends material existence. Just as in the story of King Paranjana, Paranjana became, went out of his body, got another body, and then finally husband died and the brahmana spoke to the woman and gave spiritual instruction. So in this way, material existence was ended for her. And the same way, for all jivas in the material world, if one gets the proper instructions, then one can end material existence. So that proper instruction ultimately is to take to the process of bhakti, not the other processes. They are secondary processes. So they lead partially to the goal. You can get detachment, you can get knowledge, acceptance of these processes. But the real process is to take to bhakti. So this is the real process to get out of the material world. The other processes are secondary. So, though in one sense we say that by jnana you get liberation, or yoga you get liberation, it is not completely true. Because one cannot really get liberation except by the mercy of the Lord, which means one has to also get bhakti. One has to have some bhakti there to even get the results of these processes. So ultimately, again, the real solution is to take the process of bhakti. And everything else is secondary to that. So we may mix the processes together. That is fine. But that mixture should not create a contamination. We should not lose sight of the goal. And we should not think that bhakti is dependent upon other processes. If we don't do this, bhakti is not going to succeed. No. Because the scripture tells us that bhakti is the highest process. It includes everything else. Whatever result you can get from jnana, from karma yoga, and jnana, sangha yoga, etc., you can get from bhakti also. And mind control, cities, elevation to heavenly planets, all of these things, liberation, all these things, detachment from the material world, is covered by bhakti itself. So whatever is the result of any other process, bhakti itself achieves. Why? Because the Supreme Lord is personally involved with the devotee. And he gives the results of karma, jnana, and yoga, and every other process that's recommended in the scriptures. He's the ultimate giver of that also. So therefore, Dilva Mangala Thakura said that the bhukti and mukti, bhukti meaning material enjoyment, which we get by following karma yoga, and mukti, the result of jnana, these two are following bhakti like maidservants. And they're asking, can I help you? So they're trying to do some service. But actually, the true devotee understands that these things are actually not the interests of the devotee. So he doesn't want to take their help at all. And he ignores them. Everything available through the process of karma, jnana, and yoga is available in bhakti, but the devotee tries to avoid these things because they can create unfavorable results. So the devotee simply concentrates on the process of bhakti. Sometimes other things may help to some degree. So we can borrow things from other systems that may be helpful in bhakti, as long as they do not interfere with the principle of bhakti itself. So therefore, from the varnashram system, we take cleanliness and social rules, etc. And helpful. It helps to control the senses, etc. So we take those rules. There's no interference. But things which are contrary, we have to reject. So in Varnashram, there's worship of David and so many other things. So that we have to reject. Things we can take which don't interfere with the principles of bhakti. Nevertheless, ultimately, if one forgets all the other principles or just performs bhakti, still one can be successful. And if one does everything else except bhakti, no success. So we can follow Varnashram perfectly, but no success. We have to put bhakti in there to be successful. And of course, the success of Varnashram is elevation to heavenly planets, etc. But that we don't want anyway. So, therefore, the main goal always has to be bhakti, no matter what else we do. That has to be the focus of everything. And everything favorable to that can be done as long as it doesn't interfere with the principles of bhakti. So in this way, the devotee carries out his activities. The main element is the bhakti. And bhakti, of course, is a process such that it can be performed under all circumstances. Whereas other processes require certain circumstances. You cannot do jnana in all circumstances. You cannot do yoga in all circumstances. So like yoga, you have to renounce everything and go to the mountains and everything. So not everybody can do that. And the jnani himself must study the Vedas and the Vedanta, etc. To qualify for that, he has to be a Brahmana. So there are conditions set for different processes. And even to follow Varnashram, you have to at least be a Sudra. You cannot be a Mlesha or a Chandala or something like that. So everything has its qualifications. But bhakti doesn't have those limitations at all. It is free from all that. So under any circumstance, bhakti can be done. And even if nothing else is done, only bhakti, one can be successful. So this is the main item we have to follow. And therefore, in statements like this in the Bhagavatam, we see that Narada Muni is saying, okay, the solution is to take to the Bhakti Yoga, Vasudeva Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Samahita. That is the process. He doesn't say, do other things also. He just says he did the bhakti process. So that is what we call pure bhakti. When we combine it with other processes and we have attachment to the other processes, then that becomes mixed bhakti. Karma Mishra Bhakti, Gyan Mishra Bhakti, or Yoga Mishra Bhakti. That can be done, but still, it's not as good as pure bhakti. And that is why Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, four types of people come to me. So we have the Artha and Artha-Arthi and the Jigasu and the Jnani. But then Krishna says the best one is the one who simply surrenders unto me. He's the best. So yes, these other mixed bhaktis are okay. One can do them. It's better than doing karma, jnana, and yoga. But the best is the person who simply does bhakti. That is the best position, the final position. So it should be understood that finally, if one does mix the processes, whatever, finally, as we near perfection, we should give up everything and just do bhakti. That should also be there. So the perfect form of bhakti is the bhakti unmixed with other processes.
Bhakti is independent of everything. But still the right is dependent on mercy of the Lord of devotees. Why doesn't it come on its own?
Well, we say mercy of devotees, etc. That is also bhakti.
But why it comes that way only? Because
bhakti is dependent on bhakti. Yeah, and nothing else. In other words, bhakti is caused by bhakti, not by other processes. In that way, it's independent. Of course, the cause of bhakti ultimately is Krishna.
But other problems can lead to bhakti.
Not directly. In other words, you can be a jnani forever and not turn into a devotee. You can be a yogi and never become a devotee. You just get liberation, that's the end of it. You can do karma yoga forever and that's it. It doesn't automatically produce bhakti. Only the mercy of devotees and Supreme Lord to give bhakti, that will give bhakti.
Maharaj, in Bhagavad Gita, you mentioned that few devotees are, only can become the demigods.
True devotees only can become the demigods. So that means, but in the earlier lectures we have mentioned that the human form is having more opportunity of doing bhakti and reaching the goal of Vrindavan than the demigods.
Hmm.
So how it could be understood?
Well, the earth planet is in the fifth canto, says that the demigods also long to take birth in Varsha. And one reason for that, of course, is because the Supreme Lord makes his appearance here in Krishna and Rama. So many of his avatars appear here, so that's one particularly good reason for appearing on earth planet. The other, of course, is that heavenly planets, though they are also devotees, the impetus to serve, they're not 100% pure, otherwise it wouldn't be a material world. Even Brahma is not 100% pure. So the problem with those positions is because it is very sattvic, they become conditioned by sattva. And therefore the impetus to go further is less. Whereas on the earth planet, there's a mixture of happiness and distress such that the impetus to reach perfection becomes more. So for that reason, it's said that devatas often want to be born on this planet, and that way they are reminded that they have to get out and go to the spiritual world instead of getting trapped up there.
Can we see that dreams are recorded replay of the activities in the mind? Dreams, the replay of the recorded activities in the mind, experienced by the individual.
Yeah, usually that's the case. So whatever is held up in the mind there in terms of past experiences, they are just the impressions that play again. But not always. There may be a combination of those things in different forms. So it's not exactly the same impressions. They can be combined in different ways according to the desires of the jiva. And not only the experiences, but based upon the desires, new things can happen in the dream also. So you get things you probably didn't experience, but because of your desires that you get these experiences. So maybe you see a tiger running after you in a dream. You may not have that experience in any of your lifetimes before, but you get that because of certain emotions or whatever in this lifetime. So, of course, the dreams may also be symbolic. They may simply, let's say, personify certain problems and certain thoughts and desires that one has. So they're a reminder of your mental states. And of course then we have other dreams which may tell future events, for instance. So not only things that you experience, but things which we will experience can come up in your dreams also, in the sense that your future karmas can be reflected in your dreams also. So it's not something that is necessarily experienced, but things that will come up as a matter of your karma in the future that can also be there.
Sometimes the Lord uses the dream as a way to give these devotees.
Yeah, that is also there. Of course, ultimately, we should not think that as a dream in the normal sense, because anything spiritual is not material, and a dream is a material illusory experience, just as our experience is here. So we may see Krishna with our eyes, but we shouldn't think that's a material experience with these eyes, actually. So similarly, if you have a spiritual dream in which the Supreme Lord or his devotees get messages, that also is not ultimately a normal dream. It is actually something reflecting in the Atma, which may be like a dream. It may have appearance of a dream, but actually is coming from the Atma, not from the mental states.
Is it possible to control dreams? Yeah.
There's what is it called, lucid dreaming. That is, people train themselves up to do that, in which they can control the dreams. It's just like almost like entering into a out of the body experience and doing astral travel. So you do that by your free will in a dream state. So you control yourself and go around the world and do whatever you want in a dream state. Yeah? So it's something like having mystic powers, in one sense. It's called lucid dreaming. But you have to practice to do that.
When I am trying to understand the past tense of knowledge, we are also trying to gain some knowledge. So is it the other side of
the Lord?
Is it? Yeah. We're trying to understand past tense of knowledge.
Oh, to understand the past tense of the Lord, we call that a type of knowledge, obviously. But we don't call, it's not the same, it's a jnana, but it is a Bhagavad jnana. It is not the jnana that we refer to when referring to the cultivation of knowledge in the sense of Brahman. So we call jnana yoga knowledge of Atman, Brahman. That's one, and to do that, one studies Vedanta. So that is called jnana. And then by that we realize we are not the material body, we are spiritual. So that's the process of jnana. On the other hand, we do have jnana within bhakti itself, but that's a different type of jnana. So the one jnana is quite limited. It is a spiritual knowledge up to a certain level of Brahman and Atman. In devotional service we must also have that knowledge, but we're not limited by that. So Bhagavad Jnana means a knowledge of the Supreme Lord and His qualities and His activities, etc. That includes everything else, the Brahman aspect, everything. So that is necessary for the development of bhakti. It is part of bhakti. Everything related to Bhagavan is part of bhakti. If it's only related to Brahman, then we call it jnana, in the negative sense that jnana leads to liberation, which the devotees condemn. But sambandha jnana, bhagavad jnana, these things are necessary for the development of bhakti, otherwise it becomes impure. No. Well, of course, Vaishnava, what do we mean by Vaishnava also? That's a broad term. Essentially, bhakti and Vaishnavism is the same thing. Because Vaishnava means the follower of Supreme Lord, Vishnu or Krishna. So if they worship Shiva or Durga, it's not called Vaishnavism, it's not called bhakti. Of course, in Bhagavad Gita, one place Krishna uses bhakti to the demigods also. They have devotion to the demigods, but technically we don't call that bhakti yoga.
When we look at some other religious traditions in the world, like Islam, and there is a concept of one God, and there is a concept of surrender, but per se, they are considered to be, as per the Vedanta tradition, they are supposed to be outcasts.
What is that?
Certain religious traditions, like Islam. So, as per our Vedic system or Vedanta tradition, they are considered outcasts.
Yeah.
But they also have this concept of one God, and they don't have a concept of many gods, and they have this concept of surrender. So how do we understand that?
They have a concept of surrender and they have a concept of God, but at the same time it's not a very complete concept of God. It's somewhere between Paramatma and Brahman, usually. It doesn't get much beyond that. In most cases, if you say who is God, ultimately they won't say. So they have some concept of surrender. So yes, in that sense, it is beneficial. There's nothing wrong with that. So we can say it's maybe a weak form of bhakti of some sort, maybe.
Then we can classify Maya at least to be outcast because they also have the same
concept. No, the only thing. Well, when we talk about outcasts, we don't even say that. We just say that they have misconceptions or whatever. Because they stick to a certain aspect of jnana and distort it. So the true jnana actually is, there's no contradiction with bhakti because we say Brahman is part of Bhagavan anyway. So there's nothing wrong with that. But to exclude everything else, then it becomes wrong. So that's what Mayavadis believe. They exclude the personal aspect of God and Bhagavan and say only the Brahman is there. So that becomes a distortion of the scripture. But it may take many forms because we have many processes of bhakti. Everything in the Bhagavatam is ultimately related with the Supreme Lord in that sense as part of bhakti. So all these other topics, there are 10 topics in the Bhagavatam, and ultimately the topic we want is the 10th topic, which is Asraya, that is the description of Krishna and his pastimes. Everything else, like creation or sub-creation and sthana, that's geography in the 5th canto, etc., they are, of course, related with creation of the material world. So the material world itself is material. It's got nothing to do with spiritual life at all. But the reason it's mentioned is because it relates to the Supreme Lord. It illustrates the power of the Supreme Lord. So it's the Supreme Lord that produces the material world. So Sarga and Visarga are related to the Supreme Lord in the sense that ultimately he's the source of that. So it describes some of the power of the Supreme Lord. Of course, it is secondary power because creation of material worlds is a secondary aspect of the Lord delegated to Paramatma. And Bhagavan has nothing to do with material world. He's only in the spiritual world. But Paramatma is also expansion of Bhagavan. So therefore, it relates back to the Supreme Lord. So similarly, the planetary systems and everything on Bhuloka, etc., is not directly created by the Supreme Lord, but through his agents like Brahma, etc. And the purpose of that is to provide places for the living entities to do their karma, do their activities in the material world. So all these other topics have to do with creation of the material world and the places and the bodies of the jiva, so that the jivas can, first of all, live and enjoy the material world according to their desires. And why? Because the Lord wants to fulfill their desires. So he does this. According to their desires, he does all of this. And then he also provides them the material means of getting out. And so that is also covered in things like Poshana and Manvantara, Anukata, etc. The Lord provides means by which the jiva can get out of the material world. So these are topics related to the Lord in the sense that it shows the how the Lord tries to guide the living entities in the material world to get out of that position and go to the spiritual world. So in that sense, it's related to the Lord. Yeah, why we have other descriptions? Of course, we have descriptions of material world, we have descriptions of heavenly planets, we have descriptions of hellish planets too. We have descriptions of jnana and merging into Brahman in the 11th canto, also in the 3rd canto, I think the 27th chapter, 20th chapter, something like that. We have descriptions of yoga process in the 11th canto and the 3rd canto also, and of course in the 2nd canto as well. So why we have all those things when it says that bhakti rejects everything else? So it is clearly stated in the beginning and at the end that bhakti is the process and it doesn't depend on anything else. So that's why it rejects all the other processes. Yet, we'll see them discussed, as we'll see in Bhagavad Gita also. Karma Yoga and Jnana and Astanga Yoga are also discussed, even though ultimately they're supposed to be given up. So the Lord does this for several reasons. One, of course, is that the processes themselves are part of the Vedic tradition. So the Lord himself doesn't want people to condemn the Vedas themselves, the Maya, completely, but to understand that these are secondary processes. And therefore the King's Institute, Karma Yoga and Varnashram, and it's all the Bhagavatam of the 10th canto is all the discussions of the kings and the other Manvantaras and everything introducing Varnashram system, which is also to be rejected ultimately. So yes, they're there because these processes were recommended for certain types of people, but ultimately at this present point in time everyone should just do bhakti. This is the conclusion reached by Narada Muni in the 1st canto. Everything else useless, just do bhakti. Hear the pastimes of Krishna, I'm sure, in the 10th canto. So that is the final position, and everything else should be rejected. Yet we have these descriptions here because they are somewhat in other yugas authorized as processes, secondary processes, even though bhakti is still the main process, even in other yugas. And the other reason is because Sukadeva wants to attract other types of people. And through that attraction, get them absorbed in the process of bhakti. So they will find something interesting in karma yoga, or jnana yoga, or sangha yoga, because it's in the Bhagavatam, and they'll start reading the Bhagavatam for that reason. And then they will also get contact with the pastimes of Krishna. So this way they become, develop a new attraction. So this is one strategy of Sukadeva. The other is strategy is that through these things, those people who are hopelessly involved in these elements will get distracted. And therefore, the real message becomes hidden from unqualified people. So those people who become attracted to other things, they will not see the real value of bhakti and the pastimes of Krishna, etc. So, though bhakti is not secret, still, to some degree, the Lord and the devotees hide bhakti from unqualified people. Just as we say, don't preach to the faithless persons. So, in that sense, in the Bhagavatam itself, Sukadeva also hides bhakti by putting other things in there, and if people want, they can come attract those things instead. For that reason, at the end of the Bhagavatam, Sukadeva says to Parikshit, now you've understood everything. I've talked to you all about all these different things. I've talked to you about the pastimes of Krishna and 11th canto. I've talked to you about merging into the Brahman. So now it's time to merge into Brahman. That's the end of the Bhagavatam. 12th canto. So then Jnanis will say, yes, you see, ultimately Brahman is superior to Krishna. And why does Sukadeva do that? Some people who are of that inclination, let them believe like that. They're not qualified to understand about Krishna, so let them take that. But we know that this is contrary to the import in the beginning of the Bhagavatam itself and all throughout the Bhagavatam. It is not conclusion. So we know that Sukadeva is not doing that as a serious statement. It is simply a statement to stimulate Parikshit to answer in another way. So that's what Parikshit does. So he answers back and says it's all wrong. That's not the conclusion. So, like that, for unqualified people, Sukadeva hides things.
Now we tell you that you can't do this. Even you say, okay, it's just the choice of the people. People will take that approach.
Yeah. Yeah, so generally we try to speak, but again, we cannot present everything to everybody. So if you preach to the faithless people, then it's aparad. So you cannot say bhakti is the highest to an unqualified person also. Then you're committing aparad. So we have to hide it.
That's what we're doing, preaching, because
bhakti is the highest. Well, it depends. If you do it to the wrong person, then you're preaching the wrong way. So you can't preach to aparadis that way. It becomes offensive. And that's why the Mayavadis say, oh, you are fanatical. You're just fanatics.
Oh, my father.
Your father? Anya Bhava?
Huh? I think not 20th, Amavasya Amavasya Krishna.
What did you do?
On the way, what did
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. சொன்னாங்க ரங்கநாதர்ஜி மகாராஜ் ஒன் டே வருவாரு ஸ்ரீரங்கம் சொன்னாங்க கன்னியாகுமரி குறிச்சிட்டு உடனே இந்த ஸ்ரீரங்கம் வராதுல
இப்ப உங்களுக்கு பெற்றுவா அர்த்தம் முழு சக்தி மாதிரியே இறந்த சக்தி தான் కానీ ఇక్కడ కాదు తెలుసు సంగీతంగా అర్థం ஓகே ஒத்திட்டுங்கண்டா அனைவரும் நீ கொஞ்சம் உதவி செய்யற எக்கடங்க கூட்டம் எடுக்கிறேன் எல்லாம் பத்து புத்தகம் தான் தோற்கும் இல்லை தனி கொடுத்து
Thank you.
ஓகே சரி சரி இப்போ சாமி நீ மீன் மூச்சு வச்சா நீ மூச்சு போயிருக்கியா கட்டிட்டா தோரில் கட்டிட்டாங்க தோரில் மாட்டி கட்டிட்டாங்க.
புத்தகம் யார் வச்சிருக்கா? புத்தகம் புத்தகம் பின்னாடி வைக்க சொல்றாரு.
కోర్టు యార్డ్ నేను చెప్పింది ఆ నేను చెప్పింది నా డైటీ బ్లడ్ తీసుకో.
అదే నేను చెప్పాను. ఫోటో ఉంది మాత్రం
నెంబర్లో. అదే నేను చెప్పిన చేసి నేను వర్షిప్ చేస్తానంటే ఉండు అని చెప్తాను. తర్వాత ఈ పొజిషన్ కూడా నీకు తిరిగి ఇప్పుడు నేను దుర్గదర్శనం చేస్తాను అని చెప్పాను. అట్లానే కింగ్ క్లాసిఫై అయిపోతాడు. సిస్టర్ పేరు నీవు కూడా కూడా అదేం జరుగుతుందే.
Thank you. Thank you.